Welcome to Geordie Lass and Doc Sass. One day, a Geordie and a Canadian walk into a bar and decide to start a podcast about relationships. And what a topic that is. No subjects are off limits. Get in touch today with us at geordielass.com or email info@geordielass.com and let us know what you think and what we should talk about. Welcome to the podcast.
Why, hello.
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 Hi.
How's it going?
It's really good. It's really good. I say that only because I feel like I've come through like a particularly dark and stormy night of sort of relationship reckoning or growth. And I've kind of done a fair amount of hard work and come out and I'm like, oh, wow. Anyway, so it's feeling like coming out into sunlight after a very long winter. And the winter has been about 40 plus years, but anyways.
Those stormy relationship days.
Oh my gosh, I tell you.
We all have them. That's just the way of life. And I think what I tend to find is just when you think you've got yourself sorted and your shit together, then something comes along and just completely knocks you off your perch and says, no, you haven't. You've still got something else to learn.
Oh my gosh. You know what's funny is because you and I have talked about money and how important it is. Over the weekend, I was doing a fair amount of just sort of like tax and financial planning sort of reckoning. Yeah. And I kind of, you know, I freaked out kind of thinking, gosh, you know, any of the uncertainty or insecurity I had in the past, it felt like it kind of chased up on me and that it was today. And it was sort of that moment where I was like, this is then. Or that was then, this is now, you're in a different situation, things are better. And I just, gosh, it's amazing the things that trigger you and make you feel insecure. Yeah. And then what do we do when we're insecure? We will lash out at our partners sometimes. Yeah. And so it's amazing to remember, like, it's not the person that you're with, it's the mindset situation that you're in, and you're being triggered right now, and you're safe, and it's okay, and then just take some time. Anyways, finances. Yeah. You and I both.
Oh. Don't get me started about mine.
Oh, my God.
I swear to God, like, literally, I feel like a walking cash point.
Gosh.
And not in the right way either.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, I tell you, yeah. Oh, life, you're right. Just when you get it to have a bit of, like, confidence, life will kind of give you a little bit of a nudge back down to be like, nope, still got to learn lessons of life.
Oh, yes, indeed.
So how are you doing? Are you keeping warm?
I am keeping warm. Yeah, it's not so bad here, actually.
Ah.
We're doing okay, yeah.
Ah. Not like blustery storms, wind, chilling to the bone?
No, I don't think it's been too bad.
That is so good.
Did have some rain yesterday, I think, but yeah.
Okay.
We're surviving. Surviving.
Oh,
and the nights are getting lighter.
They are getting lighter.
Yeah.
By 8
I saw
minutes.
Something the other day. I think it said something like 21 days till spring. Maybe it wasn't 21 days. Maybe it was more than that. But
no, I think you're kind of right. I think you might be right.
I was like, quite like the sound of that, actually. Yeah. Thank you very much. I'll take that.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, wait a minute. I'm like, holy crap. That sounds amazing. Okay. Done and done.
So, yeah, no, things are good. Yes.
Very good. Oh, wonderful.
I'm in a nice loved up space. So as we go through some seasons where we feel less loved up, we have the opposite effect. Times two.
Yes, indeed. That's why it's important to bank those.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To make withdrawals, kind of like the rainy day fund when you feel like, you know, you feel like your relationship is like at last days. You're like, no, it's okay. Just pull out and bank.
Yeah, yeah. Keep topping up that piggy bank so you've got enough reserves to fall back on.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're not just talking about your money right now.
Exactly. Even if major countries don't actually keep their word of keeping enough reserves, at least we can. that's good. All right. So, relationship, desk of love. What's going on?
Okay. Well, I like to share things that I've read that I didn't understand when I first read them so that you guys can all listen as well and learn something new. So you may have heard about this. I hadn't really had heard of part of it, but not in the context that this article I was reading shares. So would you like to know about weaponized responsibility?
Oh, yes. Yes.
So is this, I don't know if this is something you'd come across before, but it piqued my interest. So I read this article and thought that would be a really good one to share with the listeners. So this follows on and it talks about actual kind of weaponized incompetence, which I had heard of, which is all about kind of doing things in a poor way so that you won't be asked to do those things again. So what do we mean by that? So it might mean kind of, oh, I'll cook dinner tonight, love. You have a night off, to, you know, take the weight off. But then you do such a terrible job that the next time you suggest making dinner or you're trying to kind of avoid being asked to make dinner in the future because you've done such a terrible job, it just makes it even worse. Therefore, what's the point? Or maybe you've completely ruined load in the dishwasher, something we like to talk about often on the podcast. And then because of that, it's that kind of thing, well, I've avoided it because I'm not going to be asked again because it's there's no point. I had to rework half the load and therefore I may as well just do it myself. So that's the kind of weaponized incompetence that I have heard about in relationships, and we have to avoid falling into that trap of, all right, okay, I'll just do it myself, and taking that kind of martyr role. This weaponized responsibility takes a kind of one step further. It talks about this being the cousin of weaponized incompetence. And it talks about the kind of lists that we have of responsibility. So I've got my list, you've got your list, and we've got this kind of joint list as well. But kind of, you know, very often the stuff on the joint list will fall to one person's responsibility. But what it specifically talked about in the article was the examples of where you are in the middle of a total crisis. So it talked about kind of the situation where the kind of the mum's upstairs just changing the baby. She goes in, baby's screaming his head off, goes in, tries to look for a nappy, realizes, oh, there isn't any in the nursery. I'll go downstairs, looks for kind of like the spare emergency ones. They're not there, realizes they're in the car. The dad's fixing the lock on the door, doesn't even kind of hear the kind of kerfuffle and or kind of stop what he's doing because he's like, no, I'm doing this job. This is my job and I need to do it. So rather than kind of at that moment assessing the priority and the need and the kind of, you know, putting it into some sort of context, it's like, no, I'm being a good citizen here. I'm doing my jobs and I'm doing what you've asked me to do. And therefore I'm aren't I amazing? But in this example, it's kind of sharing, well, is it, you know, what's more appropriate? Is it more appropriate to help and tend to the baby's needs or carry on fixing the lock? So that's the description. Now, what I also loved was some other. So it says, if you need some more examples, here are some more. So it talks about...
I'm just thinking we might need a trigger warning because everyone's like, going to be like, oh my God, I hate it when they do that. Yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly. So it says, do you need more examples? Remember that time when you invited 16 people over and 30 minutes before everyone arrived, you're frantically tidying up the living room, making the turkey chili, all while your partner is changing the oil in the car. I can relate to that. Maybe not that specific thing, but I can totally relate to it. It's like, why do something that is completely irrelevant to the needs of the moment right now? So then it goes on to say, the time that you had to do all of the packing for a family vacation because he spent the entire day working out a road trip playlist.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yes.
So it's, you know, it goes on to say, like, again, it's not that your spouse isn't being helpful. They genuinely think that they are being helpful, but it's more about just prioritizing the wrong thing at the wrong time.
Yes. And maybe we need to take this up on a hot topic, but most of the time people who are doing this are like not aware, or at least they don't think they're aware, or they say they're not aware. But it's often like I will say that there is an awareness and there is an intentionality behind it, even if they don't even know it. And often it can be something, a little bit of a rebellious move, because they don't feel like they were bought in. You're the one who invited the 16 people, not me. Yeah. What can often happen is that lock or that oil change mysteriously goes away on the priority list if that person invites people over. And then they are attending to the dishes and the cooking and the prepping, and they're on point. And I think that's where we get really hurt, when we're like, when it's my thing, you are attending to the wrong priority and you're not reading the room.
Yeah, I think it can be, but I think sometimes it is just genuinely a lack of awareness about what goes into things or what's really needed at a point in time, and not taking that step back to assess the situation. I think more often than not, that's where it comes from. I genuinely don't feel like we're deliberately malicious, although if we are in a relationship, it's a massive red flag, right? Because if we're choosing that path of, well, I'm going to do this because actually I didn't invite the 16 people over anyway, so I'm just going to carry on doing what I want to do. That's quite a passive aggressive way to communicate how you're feeling.
Yeah.
As opposed to, I genuinely think a lot of the time, if we're not behaving like that, and that is, you know, as I say, a red flag in a relationship, it means that it needs to do some serious work on why you feel like that. So what is it that you feel so hurt about that you want to then inflict this pain on somebody else that you're supposed to be in this love and caring relationship with? But anyways, you say this could be like a whole hot topic in its own right.
Oh, gosh.
You can see the ladies are getting stirred up today.
We're going to get the boxing gloves out. Yeah, no, I mean, David Schnark, I think I've seen it too often to say, you know, the beautiful thing is we are not angels. We're not devils either, but we're not angels. And it's more complicated. But for sure, when this is happening, it's a real communication challenge.
Yeah.
Because it's a two to tango on correcting this imbalance of priorities or this miscommunication about priorities.
Yeah.
So that's something to remember.
Yeah, and there's no two ways about it, right? You've got to have a conversation. So whether it's, you know, that example of going to collect the nappies for the baby from the car, you know, it's about kind of in that moment, you've got no choice but to communicate what you need and why that is more important than kind of fixing the lock or anything else that might be going on. But to communicate that in a kind and fair way, which is often the challenge, right? Because the second that we go, can't you see that I'm like, you know, up to my eyes in it here and you haven't gone and helped me. Why do you not think that I need something? Can you hear the baby screaming? Why aren't you coming in, kind of checking in on us? Like, if we go straight off the bat on that kind of blame and point the finger in, then all we're going to get back is defensiveness.
Oh, and I've already got the script, which is, well, wait a minute. You've been telling me for the last 3 months I need to change the oil and you've been yelling and screaming, I can't do anything right. Here I'm doing the oil change.
100%.
Has anybody been there? Totally.
Oh, always, yeah.
Does anybody want to not go into the same like spiral, tornado spiral of despair of communication? Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
definitely.
There is another way. So this is really cool, this weaponized responsibility. That's an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah, it is.
Ah, excellent.
Okay, now we've warmed up. Would you like a hot topic?
Yes, please.
Feeds in quite nicely from the love desk. Today's hot topic, celebrating the differences between you.
Oh my gosh, we don't plan this. Okay. Awesome.
So yeah, the differences might be kind of how you choose your priorities and the things that you focus on. Differences come in so many different shapes and forms, I think, between couples. And we've all heard this kind of saying, aren't we, like opposites attract, you know, if we look for kind of differences and we want kind of things that complement us, but then often they're the things that then kind of can come between us in relationships. And I think they do come in lots of different guises. So whether that's at a deep level, when we're talking about beliefs and religion and values and all those kind of core important parts of who we are, or then right up to some of the kind of simpler, more kind of how we handle kind of day-to-day tasks and day-to-day transactions. I was having a conversation with somebody earlier who was talking about their ability to be able to always find the quickest possible solution to a problem and look for the kind of the efficiencies right across every single aspect of their life. Mm. And their partner was 100% like the exact opposite of that and would take time to maybe mull over different solutions and kind of, you know, work out the pros and the cons and those situations, even something like that on the face of it, you think, well, you know, everyone kind of processes things in a different way, deals with things in a different way. They can lead to some massive, massive disputes in relationships, can't they? Because again, you know, following on from the love desk there, you can almost see it. Like, why are you taking so long to kind of fix this? Give it to me, I'll do it. You all, and we get these kind of these phrases, don't we? You always take ages, kind of find a solution. I'm, you know, putting that kind of, I'm much better at this than you, give it to me and take over. And you can kind of almost see the argument unfolding, can't you?
Oh my gosh. You never do this. You always do this. You're always in a rush. You never, you know, cut twice, you know, measure twice, cut once. I like to be thorough. No, you're, you know, oh my God. Oh my gosh. Totally. I got all the things.
Yeah. And I think even that, so just us having that conversation there. So I'm thinking about it from one perspective. You're thinking about it from another, clearly by the comments you've just made. Yeah. So it just goes to show you how we all of us see things through our own unique lens. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, we may never ever see eye to eye on quite a number of things.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what makes relationships so hard is that we talk about the three C's and compatibility is one of them. It is actually really important to arrive at a basic level of compatibility, whether it's values, just like you mentioned, I think a couple of weeks ago, is that shared goals and purpose, like an idea and vision of where you're headed in life as individuals and as a couple. There has to be sort of a baseline. I think one of the mandatory mistakes that a lot of us have to walk through is that first relationship or second relationship where we're really different. We come from wildly different backgrounds, but yet love transcends the distance. Love conquers all. I can be with somebody from a vastly different background. We are going to be the exception to the rule. And most of us find out like, nah, compatibility, it's important. So, you know, a healthy relationship has to have a minimum amount of compatibility on the important things. But then, yes, the chasm between us is then the differences that will absolutely be there. But I feel that if we have a baseline level of compatibility and we've got that other C, which is the communication and maybe the chemistry, so we can have great sex in the middle or after or during a fight, I suppose, you know, is that it's how we then traverse the differences and how do we approach, it's all in the mindset, the perspective.
Mm. I think they do say generally there are, I don't know, 60 or 70% of stuff that you just won't agree on in a relationship, which sounds, then you think like, what the hell's the point?
Yeah.
Like, and the Gottman Institute have done research on this to say this is kind of roughly the area that you're going to be in.
Wow.
Now the difference, I think, is then how do you handle that? Because on one extreme, if we kind of say, well, no, I want my partner to be just like me. I want them to make the same decisions as me. I want them to think about things in the same way that I do. If it's true that 60 to 70% of stuff you're not going to agree on, surely that's like a life of just kind of eternal battles and feeling like you're trying to push water up a hill, which, you know, would feel impossible and exhausting all at the same time.
Yes. And that's where where we trained, which is the core dynamics kind of tenets, is that acceptance. Well, awareness. Acceptance is that, you know, the most successful couples have brushed a lot of stuff under the rug. Not the bad stuff. They're not living in denial, but they've made a conscious decision to let certain things go. Because they realize that it's just at an unresolvable impasse and they've got a choice. They either break up and do without the benefits of this relationship. A lot of the smartest people in relationship out there realize like it ain't going to get any better. Like you're not going to have more compatibility than this in any other relationship with any other person.
But I think some of that as well, though, is how important is it? Because we let our egos get in the way and go, no, I've kind of got to be right. I've got to have my way. It's this is the way we do things. But a lot of the time it's about how easy would it be for me to let go of being right in this situation or for something to happen in a certain way or to follow a certain path? How if I could let go of this, what impact is it really going to have? Is it really going to be damaging to me? Is it really going to upset me that much? What is the benefit of holding on to this?
Mm. Gosh.
You know, do I care how the dishwasher's stacked? Not really. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Do I care that the dishes are there and we haven't got a kind of eternal pile of stuff to deal with? Yes, that's more important to me. And, you know, it's that old adage, isn't it? Kind of pick your battles. What really is important to you? But I think the step that we often miss out is that discussion and raising even more awareness about what's happening. Because if we know the reason, the rationale for something occurring and why your partner might think of things in a completely different light to you, then we will be in a much stronger position to be open and then more willing to be able to let go of some of the stuff that really is irrelevant when we get down to it.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Yeah. I think one of the biggest, like, sort of illuminating moments is, like, if I let this go and if I accepted it, what would run smoother in our relationship?
Yeah.
And what might actually really improve?
Yeah.
Big thing here is roles. Like, a lot of the time, just like you mentioned, like the dishwasher, we do things not because it's the right way. It's just because we've done it that way, or somebody else taught us to do it that way. But I mean, it's not necessarily right. The other thing too is, like, we really stick to, like, there's a lot of societal a lot of, like, you know, we are told today, like, what women should do and be and the roles that we should have, and we should, you know, be girl bosses, and we should, you know, not do, you know, housework and blah, blah, blah. And those are very constraining. Those are very restricting rules, because if for some reason in my particular relationship, it actually will be of great benefit, like, it brings more to the table and brings, you know, more harmony if I take on certain roles that perhaps society these days says, well, you shouldn't be doing that, then if I'm sort of like trying to beat the drum of, like, well, what everybody else is doing in 2024, but it's clearly not working for my relationship, then I could actually end up risking a relationship that could otherwise have found a lot of harmony, a lot of balance.
Yeah. Well, you're introducing an extra layer of sabotage, aren't you? Which very often isn't a layer that you are aware that you're doing. And it's happening because you've got all these other external forces that are pushing you down that route, and you're not even kind of doing it consciously. So mm-hmm. then it becomes quite difficult to break beyond that, because you can't obviously see the impact that it's having.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, 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 absolutely.
Yeah. But I think, you know, the title of this hot topic is, how do we celebrate those differences? One thing is accepting them and understanding them. The next step on from that is actually to be able to celebrate the fact that you have got differences.
Yeah.
And I think if you're going to celebrate something, you've got to see the benefit in them. You've got to be able to fully appreciate why that difference is a good thing for you.
Yeah. And I think the thing that's been helpful for me
can feel like a step too far, right?
It can. And my younger self would see that as a step too far, because my younger self was like, well, you're right on everything. You're right. And coaching actually was a thing that introduced this possibility that, like, hell no, you're actually wrong a lot of the time. And even if you think you're absolutely 100% right, you're probably only 99% right. You're still 1% offside. And that has been this game changer, because I'm like, wait a minute, like, just because I'm the protagonist of my own story, doesn't it all mean that I'm right? And my partner has the ability to show me a different way of doing things or thinking about things that like, in the worst case, in the best case scenario, might actually be a improved way of living life. And at the very least can be something where I'm like, well, you do you and I'll learn something. Or I'll, you know, or maybe I'll keep doing what I'm doing and we can both exist alongside each other. But the celebration is, I'm like a really flawed person, and left to my own devices, I'd be insufferable and pretty miserable. Yes, I would have an unopposed, I would be able to wake up every single day doing stuff exactly in the way that I wanted to, but I'd be like, I'd have 10 cats and I'd be peculiar and, you know, eccentric as hell. I'd be insufferable. Like, thank God I've got a partner who's totally different than me in many ways. Humbles the crap out of me, frustrating sometimes, but just totally adorable. Well, that's because I still find everything he is adorable. We're in that stage, guys. We're in that stage.
She's in the love stage.
I'm in the love stage, right? Yeah. So, but yeah.
But, you know, I think if you work on the principle, there is no right and wrong. There is only different.
Yeah.
Then all of it's to be celebrated.
Yeah, it is. It is. I am, well, because I'm in the love stage, but I am deeply appreciative of this opportunity to be with my partner. Because even just meeting, it was just even a serendipity to even meet him. You know, even that my life had the opportunity to have him in my life. So whatever I have to do to keep this beautiful experience going, whatever compromise and so forth, because it is rooted in a healthy place. It's where I have grown and he's grown and that sort of thing. And we both bring our collective, you know, life experiences and trauma to the table that has formed us all in a good way. And so, like, you know, if it's between that and kind of this petty thing of like the way that I like to load the car as we're on a vacation, yeah, I'll happily do it his way. Even though I'm like, wait a minute, why do we have to repack the car? But I'm like, it actually makes sense. He's way better at sort of organizing things in a way that doesn't cause things to be broken at the end of the trip, to be like, oh crap, I left that on the floor. Yeah, now it's broken. So my life is better for it. I went on a tangent.
Not at all. It's a great example, right?
So yeah.
I think in that situation, it's about just understanding, why are you doing things the way that you're doing them?
Mm-hmm.
What is it you're trying to achieve? What is it you're trying to avoid? What can I learn from that?
Ah, that's a beautiful question. Ah. All right. Celebrating the differences.
Hey, yes, indeed. Yes. All right. Shall I move us on to a question?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Question. My partner and I have been fighting for well over 2 years. We have one child together and I have 3 stepchildren. We've been married for 6 years, and more recently, I feel like it's them against us. I'm tired of all the arguing. Help.
I mean, the first thing that's interesting is like the time frames are, I'd probably, from a coaching side, say married for 6, in conflict for 2. So I'd be wanting to kind of dive down to say, was it conflict-free for 4 years? Or was there something that happened in the last 2 to 3 years that might have been? So, and I'd be curious about the child that they have together. When was that child born? What are the dynamics going on with the 3 stepkids? Like, again, was there a formative event? Although, to be honest, as coaches, we'll observe that people will say, well, it all started when such and such happened. But as coaches, we generally find out that there wasn't just one event, that there tends to have been kind of like a straw that broke the camel's back, that things were starting before we thought they had started. So just saying.
Yeah.
So I think for me, I just want to first get some more information around that. But let's just say, like, zipping right to being in conflict like this is so painful, because this person is trapped, right? It's just, they've been fighting for 2 years. Yeah. And you're like, oh, but surely there's like weeks and months that you go without fighting. And I'm like, no, I get the sense they're fighting all the time, right?
Yeah. And I'm sure there are kind of spaces in between. But generally what you find is, because you're not resolving the underlying issues, the same kind of needs and wants are going unmet, and as a result of that, there's this same kind of push-pull in this kind of stake of conflict. And talk about in the program that I have relationship reset, where it's about that kind of negative dance. It's that just continues into infinity, because we're never addressing the underlying challenges that keep coming up and being triggered by different set of circumstances. So we often think it's a different problem, but it's just that it's manifesting itself in a different way inside the relationship, because the underlying issues that are driving it are never getting resolved, because we don't get kind of deep enough to talk about that.
It's true. And actually, plug for the relationship reset, because you may feel like you already know where the cycle is, but it is important to do this exercise to actually understand specifically where you're getting trapped into going into that circle.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just even being able to identify it. So most of the clients that I work with, as soon as we start to kind of talk about how this is manifesting for them, and I replay that, you know, based on the research around the negative dance, then they go, oh yeah, I can see it now. Mm. I can see exactly how we do this, why we do it. And I can see that this is not getting us any closer to a healthier, happier relationship. So I think that is definitely one of the things I would suggest is probably happening between this couple. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing I really stands out for me, and maybe that's because I've got kids, my partner's got kids, I kind of know what it's like to be in that kind of blended environment, is this thing around the them against us. Mm-hmm. And it sounds to me like this person feels very isolated inside a relationship. Mm-hmm. And that is always a flag or a sign that things are not healthy. Mm. And you need some sort of level of intervention because you are not in a space where you want to be. And then we then see some behaviours that then kind of trickle on from that around no longer wanting to be in your own home environment, which should always be your sanctuary. And I think if you are avoiding being at home and or you're taking yourself out of key situations because they feel uncomfortable, that is not how you should be inside your own kind of family home.
Mm.
So I would imagine there's some of that that's kind of happening.
Oh my
gosh. And all of that feels very isolating and lonely. Talk about loneliness being a big killer, but I don't think we often recognise how lonely it can be inside a relationship. Oh. And with that comes a certain level of kind of shame, like, because I should be happy because I've got what everybody, you know, aspires to have, like, you know, the kids, the partner, the house, the all those things that is the kind of normal aspiration that we see. I've got all of those and I'm still not happy. I still feel miserable and I still feel alone.
I mean, gosh, wow, that is, okay, talk about triggering. Yeah, I mean, if you find yourself in a traffic jam on a drive back from work where you're going home and you're actually kind of thankful for that traffic jam because you're feeling dread walking in that door. The other thing that can absolutely can be where you wish you could leave and get your own hotel room and just spend a night to yourself because the tension in the bed or the tension in your relationship, it's just oppressive. My gosh, that sense of loneliness.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think what I would say as well is with kind of blended families, we often think it's the blended family that's to blame. And if we didn't have a blended family, things wouldn't be like this. I absolutely don't believe that that's true because we have many situations where we've got couples who are, you know, have stayed together. They've got kind of, you know, 1, 2, 3 kids, however many it is. And they can still come up against exactly the same problems that we see in a blended family. I think it gets exacerbated because you've got this kind of step parent situation and there's a kind of, there's a delicate balance to walk between kind of how much do I get involved? How much do I not get involved? Like this came up recently with a client of mine and just knowing actually, you know, that challenge of, and we see it on kind of with males and females, you know, that challenge of how much of a father figure should I be or how much of a mother figure should I be? And then it's kind of made even more complicated by the fact that on the other side, you potentially got another set of people who were also treading the same kind of balance. And and then we bring to that party different beliefs, values, ways of seeing the world, different ways that we were brought up and expectations within that. So it is a difficult situation, but I don't think it's one that's kind of, you know, it's not something that's unique just to blended families. This sort of stuff happens. It can just feel a lot more complicated. And I think you can often get this kind of them and us situation a lot more, which, you know, you wouldn't necessarily will always feel that in a, you know, in a relationship that hasn't, you know, where you have stayed together and you haven't got that blended approach.
No, totally. And that's a great thing to say, because like minus the part about the stepkids, I was recognizing this 2 years of continuous conflict when like the biggest stressor was like shared cats, right? Like you can find anything to have negative conflict cycles over. What is curious about the general approach to step parenting in blended families that I have seen is that nothing should be assumed as a sacrosanct nope. You know, for example, oh, my kids will never accept this. We'll never be able to contemplate this particular thing, like this, you know, rule. Or as a step parent, I will never sort of bend to this or go over this boundary of mine. The never
having
say
really
never.
Fixed, yeah, having really fixed views about how things should be.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say something similar, but in a slightly different vein, is don't get caught in this trap of, we can't go back on kind of choices we've made, or we can't kind of, as you're saying, we can't bend from a certain kind of prescriptive way of how we've said that things are going to be, because, I mean, God, kids, you've got to love them, but they certainly kind of test things because they change all the time. They're in this, that's part of their role, is to evolve and naturally change, and with that comes different challenges. And I've talked in the past about ages and stages and then the challenges that come with that. So because of that, your parenting, and whether that's kind of collectively with the person who you're, you know, who is the kind of mother or the father, or whether that's in this blended situation, collectively, you've got to be able to kind of bend, weave, shape, try different things, because you're always being presented with different challenges, and the kind of old way or the stubborn standard way of doing things isn't always going to work and produce the results that you want to.
No, absolutely. And not only are your kids changing, but depending on how old they were when the relationship in which they were born, depending on that, they're going through their own grief, their own rebellion, their own blame. So I think on one side is, I have to protect my children who are harmed by, or very, you know, grieving this divorce, and I cannot have them exposed to any stressors. And so therefore, my partner, my new partner, will always take a second seat to my kids. And that's a very common assumption. My kids are number one. My new partner will always be number two. Okay. So maybe there are instances where you're not going to introduce a new partner before a certain period of time or whatever. But one day, you're going to have to like rethink that, because your partner can't always be number two. And I've literally heard people say to each other, you're number two to my kids. Yeah. Maybe at the start of a relationship. Sure. That cannot always be the case. And rules, you know, conversely, right? You always take the kids' side and you never stand up for me, and I've got to have some space. Yeah. Well, you know, depending on the stage, like this might be a very sensitive time where, you know, the new partner does have to take number two, but it has to be in flux. And just like you say, nothing is fixed. No nevers are all never, or no always is ever fixed.
Yeah. I think, I mean, I completely sympathize with this listener. 2 years is a long time to be in a state of unhappiness. I think it is hard to feel like you are an outsider in your own home, in your own relationship. But I think now is the time to take some action and to really try and resolve this, because it is not going to go away of its own accord.
And furthermore, something new has to come into the picture. So this, again, is where coaching can help, because if you can start to see one thing in a little bit of a different light, then it will stop you from entering the same argument with the same defenses and the same arguing points.
And sometimes it can be that same kind of spiral that happens where, you know, you go into that position where, I don't know, maybe you've had a row. It can be very difficult to view that objectively and to really kind of think about that in a different way or process it in a different way. You then start to feel really crap because you've had an argument. You then start to feel like this just can't be the right relationship for me. You then start to think about, well, I'm trapped. So you then feel stuck. You then start to think about the child that you've got together and, well, how's that going to work? You maybe start to talk about the kind of, you think about the money side, like how would this ever, and now we've got these kids and kind of collectively, then they're all going to be from a kind of, you know, broken, and we start to get into kind of catastrophe mode where it feels like in that situation, nothing can ever be right again.
Yes. Yeah. And then maybe there's an apology or a nice moment.
A flight. Yeah, yeah.
And then you're like, oh, actually, it's not that bad. I'm overreacting. Yeah. Maybe we are okay, whatever. Oh my God, rinse and repeat. Yes. Yeah. I mean, they've got staying power. Like any conflict that goes 2 years, they must care about, they must have some sort of commitment, right? Like to the relationship. Maybe some trauma bonded codependency. I don't know. Like maybe
either commitment or fear, isn't it? But very often I see the situation where people genuinely love each other and they genuinely think that what they have is special. They just can't get past this kind of really shitty period. And as you say, it often takes a bit of outside help in order to get to that position. But, I would also ask the question, you know, have you voiced the fact that you feel so crap right now?
Mm.
Well, because often we don't. So again, you know, we'll do that passive aggressive behavior to try and tell somebody that we're feeling unhappy. And we don't actually spell it out and kind of say, you know, I really don't think I can put up with this. I can't. I feel miserable.
The beautiful thing is when your partner's like, I feel miserable. I feel stuck. Yeah. I feel hopeless.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And often you kind of get that response back, don't you? I think, you know, sometimes you get the whole thing, well, there's nothing wrong. You get a kind of, dismissive response. But very often you will kind of get the, actually, I feel crap too. And I'm really glad that you brought it up.
Because
I really love you as well, and I want to do something to work on this.
But I'm stuck and I'm miserable and I don't know what to do. It's amazing to get on the same side. Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. And it comes down to having the right skills, I think, to be able to navigate it. And that's where the challenges lie.
Because we were never given the skills.
Yeah, exactly. Ta-da. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the cool thing is like when I work with folks and they have an argument, but it's not the same argument. It's like actually a different argument that's further down the road. It's almost like getting to a video game level that's actually really hard.
Yeah.
But it's not the same darn level. And you're like, oh, okay, well, this is still an argument, but at least we've moved forward and it's different. I mean, that different argument is better than the same argument, which is kind of interesting. Yeah. So,
And often I think the other thing is people feel fearful about addressing anything because they don't want to blow the whole thing apart, you know. But that's obviously out of fear of kind of the unknown. But just by taking a single small step to understand the tiniest little part about your partner that you're not aware of or you don't know, or sharing the tiniest little part of you with your partner that maybe they don't know of. And no matter how hard that is or how small that sharing is, that is going to be the very, very first step and the most important thing you can do to improve your relationship.
Oh my gosh. Yes. And I'm going to say there's like three benefits at least to this. And I've realized that like I went long relationships without ever really venturing out in a healthy way to share something. So, you know, what I've learned is don't share the unfiltered stuff, filter it, like remove all the crazy because there is a lot of crazy. Get down to the, it sounds cheesy, but it's true. Like when this happened, I felt like this, you know, get all the other really angry stuff that you thought in anger, just kind of let that go. And then sort of present the thing, you know, it is true. Like I am a total princess in some ways. There are things that make me hurt that would not hurt other people. And I feel really shameful for it. But you know what? Better that they know why I'm upset than sort of scratching their head like, why is she so angry right now? Yeah. And at least if they don't align with that and they're like, I'm sorry, that's too much for me. Well, then we break up and part ways. But it's amazing how people will actually love you, even if even for your princess ways. So that's totally it. And seeing your partner step up to the moment of hearing and responding and receiving what you say, and then adding to that in a constructive way is so, so cool. To be known a little bit more is so cool. But you know what?
Yeah.
You know, reveal your princess ways and just give your partner the opportunity to hear it and to assess whether they can satisfy that princess request or not. And oftentimes they can and they will. And oftentimes it's not as bad as you think.
And any other things that you might want to reveal, whether princess-like or not.
Totally. It's funny because like I had a princess reveal moment recently and my man was like, oh, thank God, I thought that you wanted me to buy you a Jag. I was like, oh God, no. He was like, I can do that. I was like, okay. Yeah. I don't want a Jag bought for me. If I did, I'd buy it myself. But yeah, that's my princess flavors. We seem to align, so it's perfect.
Yeah. Well, it's all about taking the first step.
It is.
Okay. Oh, well.
Yeah. Yes.
We've had a definite relationship workout today.
Oh my gosh, I'm feeling good. I get to go on to my late Greek, my Greek time dinner with lots of stuff on my mind. I actually can't wait to share this with my man.
Well, yeah. You enjoy doing that, my love.
Well, because we always learn. I learn so much from every podcast recording. Yeah. I'm like, oh yeah, well, I should be doing that.
That's why we want to do this.
I know. Oh gosh.
Okay, well, till next time.
Till next time.
So that's it for another week of Geordie Lass and Doc Sass. We hope you've enjoyed listening as much as we've enjoyed chatting. Get in touch and share your questions for relationship remedies and any hot topics you want us to cover. If you need help navigating all things relationships, Anna and Sarah are available for one-on-one coaching support. Email info@geordielass.com. Please remember to like, share, subscribe if you've enjoyed listening. And if you've not, how on earth have you made it this far? I promise we'll try harder next time.